We're excited that we've picked up a bunch of listeners all over the world, including Japan, Ireland, Sweden, and even the Congo. Horror is truly a global village of the damned. Thanks a bunch, everyone. You might have seen the announcement on Dread Central, Daily Dead, or Shock Till You Drop that our book, Death by Umbrella, The 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons, is out. It features a foreword written by Lloyd Kaufman of Troma and chronicles our favorite kills and our favorite weapons, covering indie horror to mainstream slashers and beyond. We're happy to report that the digital version of the book has now been added to Amazon.com, where you can also find the soft and hardcover editions. On with the show.
Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind a Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right? All right!
They're coming! The rats are coming! Thousands of them!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord! It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Hey, wait! There's something weird here.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family. We're downtown Toronto headquarters. Here's episode 103. 1985's Hellhole.
Hellhole!
You know where you stand in a hellhole! Not the Spinal Tap song. As I was watching this, I was wondering, and I have a question for you right off the bat.
Okay.
Was this a porno that turned into a horror film, or the reverse? Because this has so much nudity, it's ridiculous.
You know, it's funny, because it might be just me having seen so many exploitation films that I didn't consider it to be a porno. I didn't think there was that much of an overabundance of nudity. I've seen movies with a lot more, and I didn't really think of it to be that much of a horror film either. To me, it was interesting. It was more like a women in prison movie set in a hospital.
There's more nudity in this than a lot of women's prison movies.
That is true, and there was a lot of full frontal nudity, but all I'm saying to you is, you know, having seen a lot of the films that, let's say, Jess Franco, or, you know, Joe D'Amato, or Jean Roland, some of these European maestros.
But you don't expect that from a 1985 shitty
Schlocky
horror film.
Yeah, well, again, I'm debating whether or not this is a horror film. There's not a lot of horrific elements. There is a lot of nudity. I will give you that.
A lot of bush?
Yes, to quote Revenge of the Nerds, we have bush. yep, and a lot of C's and D cups.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to ask you, because this was another Chris pick. You discovered this movie. I had never heard of it before. What was the impetus for you to
the soon-to-be lost-to-the-ages experience of picking something up in a video store as they disappear from the face of the earth? This one just had a really good cover of a masked figure cloaked in scrubs, mm-hmm, with a giant syringe sticking it in the neck of some nubile. Mm-hmm. That I am all over that. It reminded me a lot of Hospital Massacre.
I was going to say, it must have reminded you, because that's almost verbatim, like, you know, the cover, yeah. Although Hospital Massacre, it was an illustration, I think, and I believe this was a photograph.
Yes.
I saw the cover on IMDb.
Mm-hmm.
So you rented it, and you texted me and said, yep, we got to podcast this one.
Yeah.
And so I looked it up on IMDb, and right away, I look at the cast, and I said to myself, this is B-movie Nirvana. Because we have, in this movie, Marjo Gortner, one of my absolute favorite former child evangelists turned shitty B-movie actor.
Oh, one of those, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That old saw, yeah.
Pretty much the only one. He was the world's youngest ever televangelist. This man was in Star Crash. He was in Food of the Gods. But the most impressive thing he was ever in was a documentary called Marjo, where he obviously was playing himself, and it was an expose of the religion business. And he said, okay, you know what? He, at this point, he was lapsed. And he got a camera crew together and said, I'm going to go on one last tour, one last shebang, and show you guys how easy it is to make money on this circuit. And at the end of it all, I'm going to expose the religion.
Interesting. Yeah. Last night, I watched a documentary. I was woken up by a neighbor. I was up at 3 a.m., and there was a documentary on the amazing Randy.
I've seen that too. Yeah, yeah, the skeptic debunker,
the spoon bending charlatan Uri Geller, and he also debunked, I guess, a very popular televangelist from the 80s by finding the radio frequency he was on. And
Peter Popoff.
Yes,
and devil, come out.
Yes.
Can I interrupt you for a moment?
You met Peter Popoff?
No. When I was a child...
He healed you by laying his hand on your forehead?
When I was a child, my uncle used to put his hand on my forehead, give me almost like he was like, you know, giving me the Iron Claw, Baron von Raschka, and go, devil, come out! And I'd be like, why are you doing this to me? And he told me about Peter Popoff. I was about 6 or 7. So one night, I was sleeping, and my uncle was in from Saskatchewan, so he was staying with us. And he says, he woke me up at like 2 a.m. and said, come, you're going to see Peter Popoff. And I saw this idiot doing this devil come out, and I was just like, I couldn't believe it. So yes, the amazing Randy debunked this
The radio frequency of this televangelist who was being fed information about people. Mm-hmm. And he, I guess, got on there and exposed this guy famously on Johnny Carson, and just as he did with Uri Geller.
Yep.
And so this was interesting, and I'm dying to see this, and I had no idea that Hellhole would expose me to all this, this via its stars, many of whom I never heard of. The director I'd never heard of. I think he's done two projects, both of which were just straight to video, nothing.
Well, interesting enough as well, and this is sort of a tangent, but when I looked up Hellhole on IMDb, there were two Hellholes. There was this one, and there was this is one word.
Yes.
And then there was Hellhole, two words.
Sirio Santiago.
Sirio Santiago, one of our favorite Filipino women in prison directors.
Yeah.
So we have to look for that one in the future. But yeah, I'm going down the cast, and I'm seeing Marjorie Gordner. I'm seeing Mary Warrenov. I love Mary Warrenov. I mean, Eating Raoul, Rockwell High School.
Andy Warhol, Factory Girl. Yep. From here till next Thursday.
Super attenuated features, as you said, way back when. Yeah, I mean, Mary Warrenov is always...
a jaw that could, I don't know, crack a windshield. Just an incredibly pointed face.
Well, speaking
really
of jaws,
interesting face.
Robert Zadar.
Yes.
Robert Zadar, one of my... May he rest in peace. This was his film debut. He was actually billed as Robert Darcy.
Oh.
And, yeah, the great Robert Zadar from, you know, Maniac Cop, Tango and Cash, Soul Taker, Samurai Cop. Unbelievable. Going down the list, Edie Williams. This is... She was an ingenue that was married to Russ Meyer.
Interesting.
They got married in 1968, and he wanted to make her into the next big star. Of course, we know what Russ Meyer's predilections are in terms of females.
Physical.
And he was enamored with this Edie Williams, and he had her... She was the focal point of Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, which came out in 1970.
And co-written by Roger Ebert.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. And but the reality is that despite all of her physical charms and assets and whatnot, Edie Williams could not act worth a lick, okay? So try as he might, Russ Meyer could not get this woman to become the next big thing. They had a tumultuous marriage. Meyer divorced her in 75. After divorcing Russ Meyer, she was actually involved with Mickey Cohen,
the gangster.
The gangster. Yeah.
Whoa.
And yeah, she's sort of like one of these fringe figures, you know, of like the Hollywood underbelly, you know. Mm-hmm. She used to make appearances at Cannes every year in some scandalous outfit and everything. But I mean, mostly famous for the one film she did with Russ Meyer, her bountiful breasts, which she's willing to show at a moment's notice, and her abysmal acting ability. Finally, when I finished watching this movie, I'm looking at the credits and I see Diane Thorne. Diane Thorne? I didn't even see her in that movie. This is Ilsa, the Wicked Warden herself. She played a character by the name of Krista.
That must have been ring a bell.
She must have been in one of those sapphic shower scenes with like 30 other women, but I didn't even see her. So, I mean, this movie is a B-movie nirvana when it comes to the cast.
For sure. Maybe not so much when it comes to the plot.
Exactly.
Not on the side of Nirvana there. You can explain it away in half a tweet, not even the full 140 characters. Basically, you have a killer named Silk, who looks like a 1930s strongman, like crossed with Frank Zappa.
I was going to say, when I first saw him, that he actually looked like a village person. Yeah. He looked like he was a sixth member of the Village People, because when we first see him, when we first introduced to Silk, you know, and he's dressed up in leather, and he's got the mustache, he kind of had that biker look from the Village People.
Yeah, yeah.
And
the giant sideburns.
He breaks into this house, and I got a question for you, because he breaks into this house on behalf of some, you know, nefarious cops or what have you.
Yeah.
To get some records, some papers,
banking information, yeah.
What was the significance of those? Because it was never
explained.
They never
explained it. They never explained it. It was just a MacGuffin.
It was a MacGuffin, yep. And it was completely left up in the air. It wasn't explained. You know, somehow these bank statements must have been incriminating to somebody, important to somebody else.
Yes.
There's a young lady by the name of Susan. Her mother urges her to take a shower. Susan is taking
Interestingly, there's the one moment where this does not have nudity. Of all the shower scenes and the mud wrestling and God knows what in this, there's actually a chaste, non-nudity shower scene. So she's there washing away, and her mother is downstairs in the kitchen, and the killer springs in and begins to throttle this poor woman's neck, trying to glean information about this MacGuffin document.
Yep. And lest you're wondering why his name was Silk, his method of killing the mother was removing his red silk scarf from his neck and asphyxiating the mother with it.
Yes, and I guess she has time to cry out. The daughter comes down and screams, sees this killer who's at this point done away with mom, and did she run to the upstairs bedroom, or I can't remember what, she
was this house semi under construction or something?
Oh no, maybe she ran next door.
Yeah, okay, that must, yeah.
Okay, yeah, if we're a little foggy on the details,
it's
which is ironic because there's no plot.
Right.
And we still can't even keep
the sort of dark. It's really hard to make out much as details or anything, except for the boobs and boys, but anyway.
This is true. Okay, she runs out the front door, runs into a house under construction,
yeah.
Silk chases her.
Still asking about these documents, which she has no fucking clue what they are.
Yeah, it chases her to the rooftop. She, I guess, plummets several stories down, and we leave her for dead. It's almost like, I want to say, prom night. And although she is not expired, she is traumatized and is in the care of the healthcare workers at one Ashland Sanitarium for women.
Yes.
Who knew that they separated according to gender mental health patients?
And to this movie's credit, not Bellevue.
No. We've seen many a Belleville hospital in our day.
Right. So now she's now an amnesiac. She has no idea, you know, what happened to her, what precipitated, you know, this
the killing and the strange.
Well, she doesn't even remember the killing of her mother at this point. Now, Silk has unfinished business, and he's conscripted by whomever is pulling the strings to work as an orderly in the hospital.
To go undercover. Yeah.
To go undercover, and
he cuts off his crazy Frank Zappa mane
and
makes himself much more shorn so that he'd be able to be hired by this institution of questionable quality for sure.
So as Susan is getting acclimated to her new surroundings, we're also introduced to another character in the hospital. This is a guy by the name of Ron. Ron is sort of like,
is he a psychiatrist or a psychologist? He seems to wield some sort of authority.
Yeah.
We're not exactly, you put that in the same category as the nebulous documents, but I'm guessing he's a therapist.
Well, ultimately he was an undercover reporter, I believe, trying to expose the nefarious goings on at this sanitarium, because he asks about this building, and it's like Fight Club, you know? The first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club. Well, that building is hellhole. And the first rule of the sanitarium is you don't talk about hellhole. Because in this hellhole, there's some very nefarious goings on. We should mention that Mary Warnoff plays Dr. Fletcher.
Yes, and she's conducting these mysterious experiments where she's trying to, as she puts it, enter the locked door of the mind. And this involves some sort of sedative / drug-like lobotomy procedure that she's trying to administer to these unwitting, unwilling haven't signed the consent form, poor patients, mm-hmm. who she straps to a horizontal gurney, mm-hmm. and injects in the neck to try and, I guess, alleviate their delusions or whatnot. So she's doing some sort of crazy experiments that are far removed from any sort of medical licensing board, mm-hmm. and they're done in this basement.
Yeah. And which is dubbed Hellhole by the inmates. Now, and her accomplice in this, her partner in crime, is a doctor by the name of Mitch, played by Martha Gortner.
Yes.
You know, again, Martha Gortner, love the guy. He's probably the least convincing action hero I've ever seen in Star Crash, one of the least convincing football quarterbacks in Fear of the Gods. I mean, the guy is... He's got this sort of white man's fro.
He does have sort of Matthew McConaughey hair, if not his good looks.
He's got this really reedy voice. Yeah, I mean, yeah. When I'm first introduced to Gortner, it was his voice off screen before I actually saw his guy. I'm like, oh, there's Marge coming in. I was so excited. Interestingly enough, with Dr. Fletcher, I read that as sort of a reference to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh.
Because Nurse Ratched...
Louise Fletcher.
...was played by Louise Fletcher.
Okay, that's reading a lot into it.
The head of a sanitarium.
Yes, yeah.
I don't think that was an accident. I think the filmmakers, the screenwriters, actually had one flash of brilliance and put that in.
It's giving probably far too much credit than what they deserve, but anyway, as things unfold, we have the orderly, who's trying to get access to poor Susan. Mm. And we should describe, I guess, her confines, not initially. She's put in a rubber room, the typical unfortunate, due to prevent self-injury kind of rooms that they put patients in. The people in Hellhole, by contrast, it looks like the main concourse from maybe Alcatraz. Like there's hand, they're all, they're locked up as if it's a federal penitentiary.
Well, they reminded me of the cage women in Bloodsucking Freaks.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, they were rabid, they were crazed, they were, I guess...
They're almost zombie-like.
Yeah, I was about to say, they were pretty much zombie-like, and just like the prisoners of the great Sardou in Bloodsucking Freaks, which, if you guys have not seen it, please do so.
Yes.
One of the most reprehensible movies that Troma has ever released. But yeah, the other thing, too, that's very interesting about this film, besides the shenanigans going on in Hellhole, are the shenanigans that are just going on in the hospital proper. We alluded to this earlier, but there is a lot of sapphic coupling going on, and there's a lot of showers where everybody is, you know, sharing soaps,
yeah.
and, you know,
rubbing each other down,
sapphic lathering.
Every nurse and every orderly, female orderly, every staff member of this hospital is under 30, incredibly buxom, mm-hmm. and willing to doff their scrubs at a moment's notice.
They all have sapphic.
With the exception of Mary Warnoff, who is not naked.
She's not naked, but you got to remember that she, too, enjoys the company of the fairer sex.
Yes.
And at one point, one of the inmates who was subjected to her experiments overdoses because Warnoff gives her too much, and she's dead, and Warnoff starts kissing her.
Yes.
And Mitch says something along the lines of, you know, we're not doing these experiments to fulfill your sick and depraved fantasies.
Yes.
You know, this is for medical science, for God's sakes.
Don't bullshit me, Miles. He's getting off, too. Oh, that's good rationalization, Doctor. The fact is, the girl died, but not the first. And even worse, they don't die. They become living nightmares down
there. That's enough.
No, it's not enough, Doctor. You're just using these experiments for your own sexual hang-ups.
At least I have sexual hang-ups. You won't even have sex.
So, but
we're always on the verge of a breakthrough.
Yeah, and it's always just right on the verge. I mean, every time you see a mad
Bell
scientist,
committee, yeah, you're almost there.
Yeah, on the verge. This was on the verge of being a good movie, but it wasn't quite yeah. there. But yeah, and of all these inmates that again are willing to doff their clothes at a moment's notice, the most naked and the horniest is the inmate played by Edie Williams. Her name is Vera. And this is a woman who likes her crystal meth.
Yes.
She likes...
she spawns into a closet with a co-worker and does meth, as one does on the job. Doffs her clothes a moment's notice, gets into mud baths,
mm-hmm.
Remarks about how hard her co-worker's nipples are, again, as one is wont to do.
Her co-inmate, not her co-inmate.
Was she an inmate as well? I thought she was it was hard. It blurred the distinction frequently between who was a nurse and who was someone who'd been treated, and because I couldn't,
you know,
keep track.
She very well
point.
Could have been a nurse.
Yeah.
I was blinded by those hard nipples. It was kind of...
Yes.
Mark. I apologize, but anyway.
And
but again, I have nothing to apologize for.
Yeah. and Silk is making the rounds, trying to get to Susan, and there's a subplot involving some hospital administrators. One of whom is this portly fellow who looks like a 1940s mayor with a walrus mustache, yep. And he's sweating, and he comes in with another higher up, maybe a CAO of some hospital. They want to see the facilities because I guess word has gotten out about the nefarious goings-on in the hellhole.
They want to bring Fletcher down.
Yeah, so they want to explore, and they insist on seeing the boiler room.
Right.
And they want to go down into the bowels of this thing. And that's now, where the Nightmare on Elm Street
comes in. What is going on here? Because I was going to ask you. I was going to say, did you not get a Nightmare on Elm Street vibe when you went down into the boiler room?
Perhaps minus the scares and the narrative structure, the screenwriting, the depth of characterization, the performances. Other than that, it was definitely a nightmare vibe.
Yeah. So you get the horror with the boiler room, with the nefarious goings on in Hellhole, with the mad scientist vibe, with these rabid zombie-like women in cages. But as I said before, to me this was much more of a WIP movie.
Yes.
All the conventions of that were there. I mean, we didn't get the hosing down of the inmates, but
there was a lesbian head of security as well, and she got involved into a fist fight. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so there was not the hosing down
And don't forget the de rigueur wrestling match.
Yes.
Edie Williams versus somebody else. Yeah. And that was quite the cat fight, punctuated by them both beating down one of the nurses in the hospital.
Yeah.
So this movie is ultimately, I gotta say, not much of a real narrative structure to go on. It's pretty solipsistic, I would say.
I guess so.
But it's got its cheap thrills. And I was thrilled. Cheap thrills, and we do like cheap thrills. You'll dig Hellhole. Robert Zadar.
Yeah, he was. Geez, I guess he was the second in command head of security.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know if you noticed this, when Zadar was wielding his nightstick, it bent in the middle. He was clearly made out of rubber. I don't know if you noticed this.
Not at all.
Okay. Well, let's discuss how this fares. How would you compare this? I would. Maybe we want to add it to the healthcare-themed horror genre. So it's nowhere near as good as something like Coma, where the organ harvesting film, that's a big favorite of mine. When it comes to kills, there are maybe, one in this whole thing?
I'm saying maybe one or two at the most, yeah.
And there's some great lines, because as the treatment goes into effect, which I guess they refer to at one point as a chemical lobotomy, one of the characters, one of the lead evil researchers, says, "They don't die, they become a living nightmare." And so this is the much ballyhooed breakthrough that they're on the verge of. And Mary Warnoff's character is highly skeptical of any developments that they may have had, because seemingly all they've been able to do is turn these patients into zombies and not cure them of whatever ails them and their delusions and their paranoia.
Yeah, I wouldn't put as far as medical malpractice or horrors. To me, this is no Dr. Giggles.
No.
This is no X-ray. This is no. I haven't even seen Coma, so I mean
that's a really good one.
We're going to save for future podcasts. I know you've been wanting.
Is it a Nurse 3D?
Oh my God, that's one of the worst things I've ever seen. Ever. Basically, I'm going to say this is a soft core women in prison movie set in a sanitarium and with some. With a really unique cast comprised of, B-movie icons. I mean, there's someone in here that's going to make you smile.
For
sure. Whether it's Warnoff or Gortner or Zadar. There's somebody in there that's going to make you go, "Oh, I love that actor."
For sure.
That actor always delivers. And it was pretty, it was okay. It was okay.
And I've got to say, some of their methods leave something to be desired. At one point, I wrote this down here. They, on their grounds, which are quite elaborate, this sanitarium.
It looked like a university campus, actually.
Yeah, yeah. And it probably was. Mm. They had a tree, and surrounding it was a sandbox, and a bunch of the inmates were playing in it, and one of the researchers said to the other, "Sand is very therapeutic." And then, what? Like, in whose world is that?
Yeah,
what
no, are they no, doing? It was Warnoff when they're being inspected, and she goes, "I took out the swimming pool and put a sandbox in instead. I find sand to be oh so therapeutic."
As opposed to a swimming pool, and who had designs on inserting that first, that they had to remove that and replace it with the allegedly therapeutic sand, but we digress. Also, there seems to have been, I want to say, an army of orderlies from the main sanitarium rushing whenever there was a disturbance, almost like prison guards rushing to the hellhole area of this compound to deal with the zombies.
Hellhole, I think it's spinal tap, but anyway.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah, so you were saying they're rushing in.
Rushing in en masse. Like, they should have had batons to beat down the inmates, or come in with shields to break up the riot or something. They had so much staff, none of whom were working in the hellhole section of this mental hospital.
Well, did we see any sort of, like, psychiatric treatment going on besides this ridiculous...
the basement chemical lobotomy? Yeah. None whatsoever. No, with the exception of this one guy who's... occupation we couldn't even decipher.
There was no group therapy, there were no talking circles, there was no, you know...
Nothing that proved so effectual as in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Nothing Freudian or Jungian.
Nothing. Yeah. Wasted opportunity.
Just a lot of sapphic showers.
Yeah. No Nurse Ratched, no Giant Indian, no Jack Nicholson, not a hell of a lot. But yet...
But Robert Zadar.
Yes.
And I always appreciate that.
Yeah. Endlessly entertaining. Mm-hmm. So what did we learn from Hellhole?
One thing I did learn, and I'm going to just talk a little bit about Mary Warrenov. She's a treasure. She is fantastic. No matter how schlocky the movie that she's in, and I've seen her, I mean, her resume is huge. I think she's been in hundreds of films.
Yeah.
You know, from the utter classics of, the Corman, Glory years, there's some real, real direct. But of course, Eating Raoul, I mean, that's one of our mutual favorites,
for
right?
Sure.
Mary Warrenov is always, no matter what he's in, he always rises above.
Yeah.
She's never brought down by the movie.
No, and there was so much here to have weighed her down.
Yeah, no matter how schlocky, no matter how shitty the movie is, she's never brought down. She always seems to be just a little bit above, a little classier, a little more learned, a little more more of a thespian than everybody else.
Yeah.
And so...
And she's by no means a goddess, but sure, her sort of leonine, interesting face is always captivating, and her legs. At one point, there's... One of her underlings is in a hot tub and has doffed her clothes and starts reaching up one of her long, luscious gams. And you think, oh, where's this going to go? But unfortunately, not too much further, as it was interrupted by some snooping, whatever he was, reporter. And I'll take your word for it if he was a reporter. That's amazing. You missed the rubber nightstick. I missed the reporter. My God, got to pay more attention to these things. But as you said early on, my God, the darkest cinematography. It was so hard to discern what was really taking place, except for the nudity, which was lusciously shot and brightly lit.
Yeah, so that was one thing I learned, is that Mary Warrenov is a treasure, and I'll watch her in anything. She elevates anything she's in.
Yes.
And you? What did you learn?
Oh, this killer Silk, who was channeling a little bit of Al Swearengen from Deadwood, crossed with, as I said, Frank Zappa and a circus strongman with his just glorious facial hair.
And a village person.
The sixth village person, the straight village person, although arguably they all were, I think. During his attacks, I guess he at one point kills one of the patients and kills the mother, as we said earlier on, and goes after Susan. And during his attacks, his MO, in addition to doffing his silk scarf, is he sings the nursery rhyme "London Bridge is Falling Down."
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Why? There's no backstory to indicate why he would be doing this. Mm-hmm. He's not English. It has no reference point to anything whatsoever. It's just an excuse to try and be creepy by humming something, some nursery rhyme. Ridiculous. Utterly insane.
Note about Silk. In many ways, this does remind me of a Corman picture, because you have the presence of Warrenov, copious nudity, it follows a WIP template, and I can totally see Silk being portrayed by Sid Haig.
Yes, yeah.
He would have been wonderful substitute for whomever this guy was who played Silk.
Well, he has a WIP pedigree. I guess we did podcast him as he was a food delivery guy for the women's prison in some Santiago schlock that we podcasted.
The Big Birdcage.
There we go.
Or was it the Big Dollhouse?
He would have been just fantastic. And he would have cut a much more imposing figure than this ridiculous guy here. But.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It was either going to bust out into, like, you know, YMCA
yeah.
or Valley Girl.
Yeah.
My friend's up at any second, you know? So,
true
but
enough.
Instead he busts out into London Bridge.
Yes.
Reasons unexplained.
Unexplained. So much left to explain, and it really makes you wonder where they were going with this and what they had in mind, because it seems unfinished somehow. And I was watching till the very end, passed through the closing credits, and I could not believe how many stunt people worked on this thing, and I don't know for what reason, other than the protagonist leaping off the upper story of a under-construction house to escape the antagonist. I didn't see what else really needed a stunt coordinator, but there were at least 30 of them. So who knew? But this seemed somehow unfinished, and it looked like it was done sort of by committee, with some people wanting to steer it in more the direction of your Corman nudity thing, and maybe someone who had designs on making this more of a slasher, and it just didn't. It had its foot in both camps, and
didn't really succeed as either.
No,
I guess.
No.
But at the same time, we're seeing for all these wonderful B movie actors all assembled together in one picture,
yes.
and the copious nudity
for sure. Hell Hole is hella fun, and 3.5 stars for me.
Oh, wow. Yet again.
Yeah.
I don't know. You take me back with these ratings.
3 to 3.5.
Okay. I'm going to give it as 2.5 stars.
Okay.
It was worth seeing, but I mean, you know, don't go out of your way trying to track down a copy on eBay or something.
No.
You know, I'm sure that, you know, this film, we got it from our favorite Haunt Suspect video. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's out of print. I'm sure it's very difficult to get a hold of.
Yeah.
You know, it's not worth spending $90 on a battered VHS copy. 2.5 stars for me.
Okay,
fair
enough.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
so.
It's fun as hell.
Yeah.
And check out our website, www.reallyawfulmovies.com. We got reviews 3 times a week. And, of course, we have new episodes of our podcast if you enjoy what you're listening to here every Friday or Saturday. But we always have one up every weekend for your listening enjoyment. And we shall talk to you soon.
Take care.